Welcome, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to Process Potables, powered by Last Out Media. First in, last out. You can find us on all listening platforms, as well as on Instagram and Twitch at Podcast Potables Network, and on Twitter and Untapped at Process Potables. For news, blog posts, archived episodes, and info on breweries we've featured, go to www.processpotables.com. Process Potables is on tap. Cheers, everyone. What's going on, everybody? My name is Dan Morgan, your host here of Process Potables, and I am joined by my co-host Steve. As usual, follow him at SWJones87 on Twitter. This is episode 75 of Process Potables, titled, I'm Ready to Get Hurt Again. We just finished watching the Sixers' first preseason game of the 2020-2021 season against the Boston Celtics. A nice win to get the Sixers rounding in the shape. And Steve, I don't know about you, but I think it's overreaction time.
Absolutely. On my way over here, I had the conversation with myself. I'm like, okay, there's probably gonna be a lot of shit that I'm gonna see tonight that I'm not gonna like. So, but you know, I just need to not overreact. And now that we've watched the game together, I am ready to overreact. I'm ready to get hurt again. We're not drinking beer tonight, but we are drinking imaginary glasses that are half full.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a special guest joining us at the very last minute, but we are very excited to have him back, a recurring guest, the co-host of the Garbage Into Gold podcast, our friend Brandon Apter. Brandon, what is going on? Thanks for joining us tonight.
I would take a bullet for Tyrese Maxey.
Oh, we're already there. Okay, I love it. I love the energy. I mean, we can jump right into it. Brandon, before we go, make sure let everybody know where they can find you on social media and check out your podcast and everything.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Yeah, I host a podcast with my friend Jesse Larch. It's called Garbage Into Gold. We're on Twitter at Garbage Into Gold. And you can find us on Apple, Spotify, or anything. I'm on Twitter at BAfter23, but my tweets are protected for whatever reason, because protection matters. And this is my plug for Trojan condoms.
I was about to say, yeah, I'm not a. I know me and Steve aren't really protection guys, but
if I know
yeah.
You, I'll if I know you, I'll accept you. If not, I will accept you anyway. So give me a phone. Great to be here.
So make sure that you check out Garbage in the Gold and Brandon and Jesse, bringing a lot of good Sixers insight and good friends of ours. We try to hop on their pod, they hop on here. So we're going to get into tonight's game, because I really just want to overreact to a win against the Celtics, because it felt like last season every win against the Celtics really just made me believe in this team more and more. And then, of course, they disappoint the hell out of us and get swept out of the first round. Tonight, they start the season doing this, well, the preseason doing the same thing, a 108-99 victory over the Celtics. And, you know, going right from the jump here, I don't know if how interesting you guys found this or not, but the first look at what could be the actual starting five for the Sixers, which a lot of people have kind of wondered who the fifth person may be. I think a lot of people expected four of these guys, but you get Ben Simmons at the point guard, Seth Curry at the shooting guard, Danny Green, small forward, Tobias at the power forward, and Embiid at center. And, you know, you can argue the position or positionless basketball, whatever you want to call it, but those are the five guys they trot out there. And I think the big exclamation point there is Seth Curry, who many were wondering if he would be more in a sixth man role, if maybe you might see a guy like Shake Milton or even a rookie like Matisse Thybul in that starting lineup to keep some shooting coming off the bench. But they decided to throw Seth into the starting lineup. Brandon, what were your initial thoughts when you saw the starting five that Doc Rivers put out there in his first game coaching the Philadelphia 76ers?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the starting lineup that made the most sense, because I think when they acquired Danny Green and Seth Curry, we all got flashbacks of the Dario, Rocco, J.J. Redick lineups, and that's just as constructed, the what works the best around Simmons and Embiid. And I think it was a little clunky to start because they've only practiced together for what seems like 2.5 hours before the game. But I think that's the lineup that we'll end up seeing for the majority of like the first chunk of the season. But my prediction is that Seth Curry will eventually come off the bench. I'm not sure who is going to be in the starting lineup for him, but I think he'd eventually move to the bench. But to start things off, I thought they looked I thought they looked pretty good. Embiid looks so good. His conditioning looks great. Danny Green is just like Rocco on defense. Simmons looked good on defense. And yeah, Curry looked a little rusty. And yeah, I mean, overall, I think it was a good start. A little clunky, but definitely not Al Horford and Josh Richardson clunky.
Oh, absolutely. There's no way we should be seeing anything reminiscent of that as far as just kind of general fit and kind of flow with this team, hopefully based on how these pieces should work together much more efficiently. Steve, anything jump out at you from the starting lineup?
I pretty much agree with everything Brandon just said. I mean, this lineup, I'm surprised it was kind of as debated as you know, as much as it was, because I'm looking at this is a lineup I thought that we would see from day one, and that's because, you know, new coach, new players, you're going to want vets in there like Curry and Green that are going to not need as much time to adjust as people because they've played on, you know, many different teams and coaches in the NBA. I could see that maybe as the year goes on, I think if anyone on the lineup, it's obviously Seth Curry that, you know, maybe comes off the bench. And that's not necessarily because he's a poor lineup in the starting lineup or anything like that. But, you know, maybe someone like Maxey or Thibault, maybe they kind of play their way into the starting lineup, or even Shake Milton. Although as great as Shake played off the bench, I think he's your ideal sixth man right now. So.
Yeah, you both make a lot of good points. I want to address a couple of them. You both kind of mentioned Danny Green and Seth Curry in a way, and I think, Brandon, a good point by you as far as like this being the lineup. I could definitely see Seth Curry maybe being a guy that starts the game, but maybe he's not the guy that starts the second half and things like that and becomes more of a sixth man. But this is definitely their crunch time lineup, I think, and these are, you know, pretty easily the five best players on the team, in my opinion. To the point of talking about Rocco and J.J. Redick and harping back to that, I definitely don't think Danny Green and Robert Covington are that similar. I get what you're saying. They're obviously that quote-unquote 3-and-D that gets thrown around a little too much. But Danny Green, we saw a lot of things tonight. You know, he's more of a veteran and savvy defender, where Rocco's long and athletic. And Steve, me and you were watching, and we saw when Danny Green drew that foul against Tatum, and Tatum kind of shoved him off, and I said to you, it's nice to have a guy that can actually get that call.
Yeah.
Because Tatum has earned getting away with a lot of those, and we've never really had the guy that has the rep on the other side to be able to get the call against a guy like Tatum for extending that arm and pushing off. So those are the types of things I think we're really going to learn to appreciate from Danny Green. There's a couple times that I saw him kind of flat-footed, especially with Tatum, which, you know, is understandable being that it's Jason Tatum. But a few of those times he ended up recovering or being able to poke the ball out from behind, you know, real savvy, real veteran type moves. Like, okay, I know I can't stay in front of you. I'm not, you know, the athlete I once was or anything, but I'm still smart enough and I know what you're about to do and I can, you know, make my move at the right time. And he still had that timing, broke up a lot of plays. He had 4 steals tonight. In only 12 minutes. So that's pretty crazy. Obviously, preseason game, so we know the Celtics were a little sloppy and everything. And Steve, to your point, yeah, Seth Curry won't not start because of performance. And like I kind of said earlier, I could definitely see him being like a super sub, but I like this lineup to start. I think if anything, like you said, you know, maybe you throw in a guy like Matisse or even Furk or Shake or anybody like that just to move one of those guys to the bench or a second unit to kind of fill that out. But our second unit looked pretty good tonight. We saw Furk on him and Dwight Howard, I think, were the first two guys off the bench and both played pretty well. Furkan actually led the team in free throw attempts, gaining the line 7 times, one more than Embiid. And I thought Furkan played pretty good defense. He went 0 of 3 from 3, of course, and that's what you can't have him do. But I thought he defended pretty well. A lot of guys defended really well. Ben Simmons looked good. Tobias had a couple times matched up on Jason Tatum where he kind of locked him down, which was surprising. Just overall, I loved the defense and the energy the Sixers had. The shooting, not necessarily there, which could be a concern. They only go 7 of 29 from 3, but it's early. I'm not concerned about that. I think you have the right guys, and I loved what you got out of, you know, really the three biggest new names in Danny Green, Seth Curry, and Dwight Howard. Steve, what was your reaction to Dwight Howard's performance tonight?
Dwight Howard brought the big bench energy tonight. It just seemed like as soon as he came into the game, he made an impact. And it was almost surreal. I kind of had to pinch myself and like wow, we have a very capable and adequate backup center. It was really nice to see. I'm kind of surprised at this stage in his career he, you know, was able to go to the basket and just some savvy moves on the offensive end, just making – there's a play that sticks out where he kind of he had a really good timely rebound, and then like Toby came in from the back door for a nice play. And I just see, you know, a lot of like things that just kind of come to fruition, and I was really excited. Yeah, he I don't think anyone's going to doubt, you know, us signing him now.
Yeah, it was funny. Our friend Dan, Dan's bad tweets, said to us, watched him wear the jersey, take the court, and literally play for the team, and I'm still not convinced Dwight Howard is on my basketball team. It is very weird, and I think, again, to overreact to one game, but I think that this will hold true. I think Dwight Howard is a great get, especially for a matchup like Boston. They're really going to struggle with a guy like him who just camps under the rim, because he's not going to get caught out by the arc like Embiid does sometimes, which kind of screws up the advantage he has against a team that tends to run small. He knows where to be all the time, and he gets up and down the court. He still has flashes of freakish athleticism, and he's going to protect the rim, he's going to rebound, and he's going to get easy attempts at the rim. Brandon, did you have any takeaways from seeing Dwight Howard's first game as a Sixer?
A future two-time NBA champion, Dwight Howard.
Ooh.
He's going back.
Let's go.
I'm ready for it.
Brandon's bringing some energy tonight.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
You're the super sub tonight.
I don't want to repeat everything that Steve said, but I mean, I think Dwight Howard could low-key be the best addition of the offseason. Don't get me wrong, absolutely. Danny Green and Seth Curry, you're going to bring a lot, but I mean, we've been through Rashawn Holmes, who's very like pretty good out in Sacramento now. We've been through Amir Johnson, and that whole time where people actually thought Amir Johnson was good, that was fun. And then we went through Greg Monroe and Boban, and then Al Horford. Like, we've been through so many less than ideal fits behind Embiid for, you know, somebody to come in and the floodgates not open. And Dwight Howard is the best backup that we've had for Embiid. He runs the pick and roll to perfection. The shake Dwight Howard pick and rolls were very good tonight. They had that really, really nice alley-oop. He also has really good court vision. I don't know if you guys saw this, but there are a couple times where he was at the top of the key and then like just dart past it to Simmons in the post. Yeah. So it seems like he has a really good eye for where his teammates are going to be, and that's only going to get better. And I know you guys talked a little bit about defense, and I think it's worth mentioning. I mean, obviously, Dwight Howard might have played like a small part in this, but Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum, a combined 6 for 28 from the floor. So, I mean, that's what you want to see when you want to be a top five defensive team in the league. But love Dwight Howard, love what I saw from him in game one, and really love his energy on the bench. So I think he's going to be really nice moving forward.
It's just such a great luxury that's no longer a question mark we have to worry about. When Embiid's not in the game, who's replacing him? It's going to be really something to enjoy. And I just
until
look
he
back,
develops like thoracic outlet syndrome, which is bound to happen Philadelphia. But,
yeah. Yeah, well, you know, there's always that factor in rooting for a Philadelphia sports team. But I think it's kind of funny how just a few weeks ago people were like, oh, let's get Nerlens Noel back. And I love, you know, Nerlens here and there, but he wasn't giving you that kind of production that Dwight gave you tonight. And again, I know we're overreacting. This is a preseason game, but come on, he doesn't have, you know, the things like this court vision or smart playmaking ability that Brandon indicated.
I was going to say overreacting. I'm just going to come out and say Nerlens Noel is trash. He's not that good. Very overrated by Sixers fans. And I don't think he would have been good behind Embiid.
Yeah, honestly. I'm somewhere in the middle there. I was not on this Nerlens Noel nostalgia bandwagon. He could have been fine, but I like the Dwight move so much more.
Mm-hmm.
Cheaper, a more veteran, and crazy to say this for how his career really was, but I think as of late, he's earned the right to be called a mature presence and at least a decent locker room guy now, which definitely was not something you would have said a few years ago. And Brandon, when you're talking about court vision, I thought, and this goes back kind of to my point as well, is Dwight is just always where he needs to be positionally. Is one thing I saw the Sixers do a lot of tonight, which one does speak to the Celtics playing small and also Tice being out, but something that I think that it appears that they definitely worked on a little bit and I think will help just because of the better chemistry and spacing is there was a lot of, you know, penetration and driving, especially around the baseline, and those little bounce passes when you're underneath instead of like wild kickouts resetting the play, where you got a guy like Dwight or Joel a real easy attempt at the rim, or even Ben Simmons. And especially when you have a lot of big guys and it can get clunky down there, you need to be precise with your passing. You need to make those little bounce passes at the baseline into a big who can pump and then slam it or draw a foul or things like that. And you saw a couple instances of that tonight. And I think that's something that was missing from the Sixers offense last season, where they kept trying to do things where they, you know, would have both Horford and Embiid down around Dunker's spot or Ben Simmons or things like that. It seemed much less cluttered tonight, and then that created a lot more opportunities for passing inside of the post and creating easy attempts at the rim, which was something that I loved to see.
I will say in Kyle O'Quinn's defense that he was an excellent passer,
sure,
but that was it. And that
he was never inside the key,
an A plus beard.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, we'll give him the beard. Yeah.
Let me ask you guys this question.
Please.
Did you like what you saw in 16 minutes of 30 and 34 seconds out of preseason Dwight more than the 2025 minutes that you saw from Al Horford all of last season?
If we're talking the first five games or so of Al Horford, then no. If we're talking about everything else, then yes, like by 1,000,000%.
Ditto.
However, I am going to need one Dwight Howard roar that just like completely shits on the Al Horford roar that we got last season. I just need one at some point, and you know, hopefully we'll get there.
What's going to be Dwight Howard's equivalent of the clap post layup? That's what we really need to know. We'll have to find out.
I don't know. He's probably just going to like kick someone. There's definitely going to be a game this season where he's thrown out for some kind of fight. I think I would bet money on that if I could.
Hey, if he's our goon and that keeps Joel from getting, you know, hot-headed and thrown out of the game, I'm okay with it.
So I have a question for you guys, kind of backpacking off of one that we got on Twitter, and it also brings me to something that I said to Steve while watching this game. So we were asked by Kevin Mahoney on Twitter, what do we need to offer to get Nemanja Bjelica, who, if you remember, the Sixers actually had a deal in place with in the summer of 2018, and he backed out, and everyone thought he was going to Europe, and then he signed with the Sacramento Kings. He's in the final year of his deal currently with Sacramento, and would be a nice guy that can play the four, play the three a little bit. And I think if you're looking at the Sixers as kind of like a 1 through 10, like you're talking about two point guards, two shooting guards, et cetera, et cetera, the two biggest weak links you would say are probably whoever is technically a backup point guard, as there isn't really a true one on the team, and then Mike Scott is the backup four, which Bjelica could definitely serve that role. So I guess my question is, one, do you think the Sixers are going to need to make a move to replace Mike Scott, or did you see anything from Mike Scott that leads you to believe that he may have somewhat of a bounce-back season, as last year was definitely disappointing for him, had some injuries as well, played 14 minutes tonight, scored 5 points, 2 for 4 from the field, 1 of 1 from 3. But, Steve, I had said to you, because There was the one play where Peyton Pritchard just kind of like owned him. And I was like, if I'm Mike Scott, like I'm swinging on him right now. Like I'm not taking that disrespect from this miniature wannabe Gordon Hayward in a preseason game when I'm a bigger veteran, a bigger guy, a veteran than him. And just, a fucking baller compared to him. Like I would have just knocked him out to send a message tonight. Brandon, I'll start with you. What were your thoughts on Mike Scott playing tonight? And do you think that he might be at the top of the list of necessary upgrades for the Sixers to really contend?
Yeah, I didn't love what I saw, to be perfectly honest. You mentioned exactly what I was going to talk about, and I thought it was kind of hard to watch how he got like outbodied by some people. And he's not like a super thick guy, so I don't ever really expect him to necessarily outmuscle, but it just seemed like I don't even know how to explain it. I'm not sure the player he is really fits into what they're trying to do, because he just isn't the guy that he was when we first got him. Given this is one preseason game, so we're overreacting, so cut him, please. But if we're being serious, like I think it's too early to tell. He's going to get a lot of minutes in the preseason, and I feel like because he's played for Doc Rivers before, he's going to get a chance to play himself in and out of the rotation. But I just don't really see any great like other options from him. Now, when it comes to, trading for a guy like Bielitsa or however you pronounce his last name, I don't really know what other options you have. You have Vincent Poirier, who, probably isn't going to get minutes. You have their other second round pick who is probably not going to get minutes. So, I mean, you just might see points where, when Tobias isn't out there, Ben Simmons is like guarding that position, and then you just kind of go small with the top three spots. But I mean, I didn't love what I saw. He did hit a three, but I've always thought that he was kind of not a great defender and was just kind of a spark plug off the bench. So unless he can come in and just kind of hit a couple of threes here and there, I'm not sure like where his value is.
Steve?
Yeah, I certainly agree, because tonight's game, like a lot of games I felt like, whether it was in the bubble or towards the end of last season, Mike Scott looked really well in certain spurts. But again, that's kind of at, garbage time, or, you're playing, the 6 through 10 on your depth chart at that point. And it seems like a lot of times when he's in with starters or, the better players of the team, his play doesn't seem to, rise to that kind of level of play with the rest of his team. And I've seen a lot of Mike Scott over the past year or so that I just don't like. Now, as far as what it's going to take to get Bielitsa or whatever his name is, we're going to need to take his car keys and his passport so he doesn't walk back on us again. I imagine the Kings are going to, want a lot of picks, and Mike Scott is obviously ideal for a trade because of his, he has 1 year and about $5 million left, I think, on the,
yeah.
So, he's almost with any trade you're going to make, especially at the deadline, he's going to be the first piece. So while I would like someone like him, I have the feeling we're just going to be stuck with him and just hope that come playoff time, he is the old version of Mike Scott that we all fell in love with.
Yeah, I don't think Bielitsa is going to cost you that much. I mean, he's on an expiring deal as well, and it's the Kings. I mean, what are they really doing?
A couple seconds. I'd probably do it for a couple seconds. I don't know if I'd give up, like, many players if that.
No, I don't. Yeah, I mean, it might just take Mike Scott and a second or something. I really don't think there's going to be that much value for him. I mean, we'll see how the season plays out. Maybe he plays his value up. But right now, if you're talking about him just on a rental, I don't think it costs you that much. So I don't care about the move that much. I'm not sure at the end of the day when you're talking about especially the playoff rotation, what do you think a backup four is going to get, especially when you have Tobias who can play like 36 minutes a game pretty easily, and you can always use Ben there as well and just get some guards more time like that. If you can get Ben more minutes there, then that gives you more opportunity for guys like Seth Curry and Shake Milton and Matisse Thybulle and potentially like Tyrese Maxey or even Justin Anderson. I mean, if you're talking about would you rather get more minutes out of Seth Curry or Bielitsa, I think it's Seth Curry. Yeah. So I think it's not so much as, you know, who do we put in at a backup four, and more what do our rotations look like and who are we trying to find more opportunities for. And I think that there's enough depth on this team, hopefully, you know, if everybody plays to at least the expectation that we have for them, that they can be okay. And we know Mike Scott does have a history of kind of showing up a little bit better in the playoffs. And I agree with Brandon. I think to your point, maybe a way I would phrase it is, when he showed up, I mean, he was definitely the tough guy that we had. And he's not like a big guy, but he's not small either. And he was definitely more physical early on in his time with this team. And it seems like he has kind of lightened up a little bit. And I don't know if that's injury or aging a little bit, or maybe a combination of both or whatnot. But, you know, you weren't used to seeing him really get bullied. You were used to him holding his ground, at least, against most guys around his size. And that doesn't necessarily seem to be the case anymore. And even with guys that he has a size advantage against. And it was interesting because I saw our friend Kevin McCormick report that Doc Rivers said that Mike Scott had had a quote, phenomenal training camp. And I really enjoyed seeing that. Obviously, I think while we're sitting here discussing the downfalls of Mike Scott, that we all do like him. We've enjoyed his time here. He's obviously a fan favorite with the Hive and everything. And he's had a lot of big successful moments for this team. But for, you know, the second half of his Sixers stint, I would say he has been pretty underwhelming. So Bielitsa is a guy that could be an upgrade, but I also think that, you know, maybe the importance of that position is a little bit overstated, especially with a guy like Ben Simmons, who, you know, you can say is the point guard but can definitely be a four as well, and Tobias being a guy you can rely on for, one, being available, and two, playing heavy minutes. So I don't know if it's too big of a concern for me. I kind of want to go back to Seth Curry a little bit, just because the one thing that I really enjoyed, and this also has to do with Joel Embiid, who maybe we can move to next, but again, Brandon, you kind of brought up J.J. Redick, and I loved seeing, if there's one thing that I saw early in this game that was very, very promising, was the relationship between Embiid and Seth Curry. It looked like they had a really good rapport. You saw them kind of doing some of the J.J. Redick action that they had. The difference being that obviously Seth Curry is not J.J. Redick as far as how he moves without the ball and how many screens they're going to run him through and things like that. But the difference is Seth Curry has a handle. And Seth Curry can actually, you know, dribble, penetrate a little bit, pull up in the mid-range. A lot of those things that J.J. Redick didn't really do. J.J. was pretty much like, okay, I'm going to get this ball, and I'm shooting a three. And it doesn't matter if I'm moving sideways, moving backwards, leaning in. Like, I'm shooting this three. And it was really awesome to see early that Seth seemed to play really well with Embiid, you know, running a little bit of pick and roll type stuff, using the dribble handoff type stuff, and he was getting different looks. He shot a couple threes, but shot some mid-range, took some drives, so I thought that was very promising, and it made Embiid look really good. You saw him rolling to the rim a little bit, and as far as his, like, conditioning, it was good to just see him moving up and down the court. He was getting down and getting his post position. He did take four threes and missed all four of them, but I didn't think that many of them were him just being lazy and not going in, because there were one or two that came from them posting Ben up, and it almost seemed by design that Ben was the guy down there instead of Embiid. So it was promising to see that at least it seemed like it was almost planned that, like, hey, on this possession, we're going to run Embiid just to the top of the arc, and, you know, this will be an opportunity for Ben to play down low instead of Embiid. So I think that's a good solution, not only to save a little bit on Joel, but also to maybe put Ben Simmons in some prime scoring positions. Brandon, what did you think about Embiid, and especially watching him in the beginning of the game playing with Seth?
I mean, I love the dribble handoff coming back, like you mentioned before. Curry doesn't quite move like JJ does, and I think Curry just looked like a little rusty. It's going to take a little while for them to kind of figure out where, you know, Embiid figure out where Seth likes to get the ball, and vice versa, as to, you know, where Embiid will set the picks. With regard to Embiid's 3-point shooting, I think a lot of people were overreacting. You know, he shot four threes, and I'm perfectly fine with that. I think when he wasn't getting the ball to shoot it when Ben was in the post, like, I feel like nobody was really moving around. So they got into a couple of those sets where they, you know, just kind of pass it to one another at the top of the key, and then, you know, nothing's getting initiated. And that happened, I think, a little too much for my liking earlier in the game. So I feel like at some points he just felt like he had to do it because nothing else was happening. And that's, again, probably victim of them not having much time to practice together or anything. But, I mean, he looked very dominant. His conditioning looked great. He looked to run the court really well. And he's still fooling people with the swim move, too. So 6 of 6 from the line. A 4 from 3. You know, I'm not too worried about that or anything. I think defensively just his presence is plenty there. But if his conditioning is good, he can outbody guys like Robert Williams. I obviously want to see him against guys like Daniel Tice before I make like a bold prediction. But I mean, he looked really good and really agile, and he was in there for a while in the first quarter. I think his first run was until like just below the 4 minute mark. So yeah. I was impressed, and I thought the 2-man game with him and Seth Curry was promising, and there's only more that'll come from that. And I did see him and Ben run a couple of pick and rolls. They didn't really result in anything, but it was nice to see them try and run that 2-man game too.
Steve?
Yeah, it was really encouraging and exciting to see the dribble handle, because Embiid just has such great history with JJ, and doing that just had a really high success rate. And last year between with Tobias playing the three, and then, you know, Josh Richardson, like that never really materialized at all. And just in one preseason game with virtually little to no practice or anything like that, just to see Curry coming out the gate with that kind of chemistry with Joel was really encouraging. And I don't even think this is really an overreaction. It's just it was great to see. And I mean, if we never see it again, then that's one thing, but I highly doubt that.
Yeah, I'm hoping that, especially regarding Joel in the post, and again, I talked about a lot of the things I saw in their post offense tonight, I'm hoping that maybe having a guy like Dwight Howard is just going to help, you know, reinforce into Embiid what he can do, being dominant in the post. And I know Daniel Tice has historically played pretty well against Joel Embiid, but at the same time, I think we can all agree that Tice is the kind of guy Embiid should dominate. He really shouldn't be a guy that gives him trouble. You know, Tice has given him trouble before. Cantor has matched up with him pretty well. Steven Adams, those real, like, just guys that are pests, so to speak, and use their size, and, you know, a Marc Gasol and a Jonas Valanciunas, guys like that, that have always given him trouble that really just shouldn't necessarily, especially at this point. I'm hoping this is the season that we really stop having to talk about Joel Embiid having these clunkers against centers that should not have his number. And again, we've all talked about the conditioning. If the conditioning is there, I think that's going to be one of the biggest factors. It's just the fact that if he's not showing up to games completely gassed and he's able to really go out there and get up and down the court, then, you know, we saw a lot of flashes of him. We saw that one pass he got from Ben where he goes in and gets the finger roll. Like, yeah, that was one of the, you know, most agile things I've seen him do maybe since the windmill dunk against Toronto in the playoffs 2 years ago. Like, I'm not sure I saw that kind of agility from him all of last season. And we saw early on they were generating a lot of turnovers against the Celtics, and we saw him actually running out in transition a little bit. I think there was one where he was actually carrying it up the floor and he got the assist to Tobias on the break. So there was a lot to be encouraged with Joel Embiid, and we're getting really excited about all the guys around him, but I don't think any of us would argue that this thing is still only going as far as Joel Embiid carries it. So a good start for him tonight. Brandon, you mentioned him going 6 of 6 on the line, which, again, we know he's going to get his attempts and knocking them down and just being able to draw them in such limited time as well. I think it was each stint was a little over 8 minutes. So he looked good, no issues there, got the whole second half off and no trouble there. A guy that I have been pretty, I don't know the word, I try to be a realist on it. I don't want to say that I'm a pessimist about it, but I'm sure many people could say that. And I wouldn't really be able to argue with you based on things that I've said on here and things that I've tweeted and whatnot. But, you know, Matisse Thybulle continues to be a name that people were projecting into starting lineups, that people are – some are deeming untouchable in trades and whatnot. Was there any surprise to you, Steve, that he only played 10 minutes tonight with a lot of guys getting significantly more playing time, namely like a Tyrese Maxey, even Mike Scott playing more time? Matisse Thybulle barely hits the 10-minute mark. He doesn't score. He doesn't have a steal or a block. He really doesn't contribute to this game at all.
I think
all.
He had two fouls. That was his contribution.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. That's pretty much it. Was a turnover, two fouls, and a rebound. And a missed field goal. So, you know, a rookie coming off his first season, a lot of guys make that jump in year two. Is this just a preseason game and we should glance over it? Or do you think there's any concern that, you know, Matisse Thybulle may not be making the jump in year two that I think a lot of people maybe are just projecting him to do so without really any evidence that it should or will happen?
Yeah, I know we're pretty much on the same page as far as Matisse goes. And I know there's always a talk of the sophomore slump, but it almost feels like he started his sophomore slump a couple months early, you know, towards the end of last season. And it's pretty telling to me that, again, yes, preseason, we're overreacting, we're in a great mood, but your brand new, you know, first-round pick and Maxey getting all those minutes, and not did he only get minutes, he looked fucking good, man.
He was like, aggressive.
I was like, oh my God. But yeah, we'll get to that. But Matisse, who showed flashes of playmaking ability, especially on defense, there's just didn't really have the opportunity. And it's interesting because, you know, Doc Rivers, I mean, he doesn't really owe anyone anything at, you know, since he's the, you know, new coach, new sheriff in town. And I know Brett at times was loyal to Matisse, but I think he just, you know, maybe he's just not as high on Matisse as everyone else. And just seeing who did play and who got more minutes was, if anything, was definitely a little telling.
Brandon, what are your thoughts on Matisse only playing 10 minutes tonight?
Yeah, I'm not sure what he looked like in camp, but maybe he's still not fully recovered from his leg injury. I think it was his ankle injury that caused him to miss a couple of days. So maybe he was kind of like a step or two behind. Don't like the new haircut, so maybe that's also a thing. But my guess, I mean, I'm going to just pencil it up to rust and recovering from injury, but he looked about as bad as he could possibly look. He was that Matisse Thybulle that was benched by Brett Brown last season for making those kind of erratic decisions to try and get steals that were never going to happen. He made some not so great decisions that ended up in him fouling guys. Just overall didn't look great. I think his coverage was fine on the defensive end, but I feel like he's kind of pigeonholed into this defensive specialist role, and we didn't see him excel in that even slightly tonight. And I'm not like overly concerned, but, you know, since this is the overreaction pod,
yes.
I am a little bit more concerned that I let on that if he doesn't kind of show out in the first 7 or 8 games, like it could spell him just riding the bench for, you know, a guy like Tyrese Maxey getting more minutes, which is fine. Furkan getting more minutes. Shake Milton getting more minutes. But I'm not really sure what to make of his play tonight. It wasn't good, and I just hope that it was a one-time thing because we all love Matisse. But, you know, if he can't defend consistently and hit a three here and there, then I'm not sure what to do. Hopefully not another Sixers first round dud.
Thank you for mentioning Furkan Korkmaz in there. My brand really appreciates that. I agree with everything you guys said. I think we're all pretty much on the same page with Matisse. I am willing to chalk this up to being the preseason and not making too big a deal of it, although, you know, I'm trying to do that with everything else. But I do hope Matisse can find his role and make a step up in his game and really thrive here, obviously, for the betterment of him and this team. But I'm definitely concerned. I was concerned last season. Steve, you made a great point, because last season you could break it in the two. A lot of people talked about that, especially with a guy like Matisse kind of hitting that rookie wall and that time off almost being like an off season, but then, you know, not really restarting like a new season. So this is all a very strange time. But I feel like somebody who hasn't been in the league that long, if anything, should kind of have an advantage not getting the same ramp up time as you're used to, because they haven't been in that routine as much. And especially a guy like Matisse, he's in crazy good shape. He's a freakish athlete, and you would hope that, you know, even with some minor injuries, I mean, obviously he was available and they played him, so nothing that should be of any alarm to this team, that, you know, he should be able to go out there and maybe, especially in a game like this against lesser opponents and people that are rusty, you know, maybe even pop off a little bit. And it was definitely the opposite of that for him. It makes me worry if he's going to be able to do anything like that when everybody is back in a rhythm, everybody is on schedule, and it's only the best of the best as far as competition.
Dan, I have some mildly breaking news. It's okay. Not mildly. It's like very medium rare, maybe okay. Rare. Breaking news, but the Sixers just posted their post-game locker room thing as they did after wins last year, and there is no more Bell.
Oh,
really?
You know, I no mean, more, that okay. Definitely felt like a Brett thing
that they bring back, but there's no more Bell in the locker room.
I'm fine without the Bell. I just hope that Doc has something. It doesn't have to be the Bell, but I think that was a fun thing for them. And especially like when it was really about winning, like I always think it's a really good thing to have a team kind of symbol for winning and stuff like that. The Bell may have definitely been a Brett thing, and maybe out of respect to him, they're not doing that. So I do appreciate that as a guy who was...
Sixers Twitter already not happy about it.
Ooh,
so.
Interesting. Fine. But they also weren't happy about Brett Brown. So, I mean, you really, you know, you wanted him gone. This is what you get, if you ask me. But
yep.
The last guy for the Sixers I really want to talk about is obviously Tyrese Maxey, who we got a little ahead of ourselves, but you kind of can't help it with what you saw from him. Matisse did come on the scene last year with a lot of energy and everything, but let's really call it what it is. We haven't seen a Sixer come out like this and attack, especially offensively. I don't know when. I guess Embiid, you would say? Like, when was the last time that a Sixer actually came in and looked like they wanted to score, they could score, they were willing to attack the rim, shoot, do everything, and did not seem overwhelmed or out of place or like they had any kind of weird hitch or fear or phobia or allergy or anything? I mean, the kid just came in and did exactly what you kind of expected from him. Try to be a playmaker, try to create and be aggressive. And he did all those things in 12 minutes, went 4 of 6 for 8 points. Had 3 assists as well, which is very impressive, especially for a rookie and a guy who's not really a primary facilitator or ball handler. I don't really think that you could have asked for more from a guy like this in his debut. Steve, we're overreacting. Please overreact about Tyrese Maxey, or tell me why I shouldn't be.
Oh, I'm overreacting hard, baby, yes. Right here. If we had to go back, like, is it like Lou Williams, like rookie season? Like just a guy, like a young guy coming off the bench with no fear, attacking the basket, taking shots. That's got to be the last time.
Well, Isaiah Cannon definitely had no fear.
Yeah, I thought about that, but I just, I couldn't help. I couldn't.
Not drafted by us. But.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, it's exciting. And again, with Daryl Morey, we kept saying the moves he makes are just making sense. Like this is a need we've needed for a long time. And just to see this young kid come out and just going balls to the walls, getting baskets, making shots. It's exciting, man. And I really hope it's not a case of him just getting hot and then maybe hitting a wall like Matisse did, but he's already a fan favorite.
I thought you were going to say balls deep, and I was about to get really uncomfortable, but you were apparently way more professional and well-spoken than I expected you to be, nor where my gutter brain was. So.
That's fair. It's our preseason, too.
Yeah, good on you.
So,
Brandon, before I get to you, another interesting quote I saw about Tyrese Maxey again from our friend Kevin McCormick was that I think this was yesterday, Mike Scott said that Tyrese Maxey was the MVP of their practice. So it seems like, you know, he's not only did he perform well tonight, but it seems like he's been showing a lot of these flashes in their scrimmages, in their practices, and that, you know, vets and teammates alike are all noticing that this kid has shown up to play. What were your thoughts on Tyrese Maxey tonight?
Well, as I mentioned at the beginning in my introductory statement, I would take a bullet for a Tyrese Maxey.
Yes,
it did not take much. It did not take much. He was asked during his postgame presser tonight on what it was like to miss the beginning of training camp, and he said it's a minor setback for a major comeback. Ooh. Like, how can you not love this kid already?
That's like a movie trail.
He asked what kind of pace he likes playing at. He's just like, I make my own pace. Like, this kid, I mean, I'm just like, it's probably a terrible comparison, but it's just like, isn't this what we wanted Markel Fultz to do?
Yes.
Like, isn't this what we wanted him to be? Somebody who's not afraid to attack the basket. He needs to be the backup point guard by the middle of the season. Like, there's okay. Shake Milton can be the sixth man and shoot. Like, he can shoot, but Tyrese Maxey needs to be the primary ball handler for some semblance of a second unit, because I mean, it's just, he had the energy is there. The floater is just filthy, dirty, sick. And
filthy, dirty, sick. Make that a shirt. I'd wear it.
Quote that. But yeah, I mean, I just love what I saw from him. I wish we got to see him a little bit more with the guys that mattered. No offense to Furkan. I know he matters
to me.
But I really liked it. I think, it'll be interesting to see what his comfort level is shooting from beyond the arc. But it looks like he has plenty of confidence coming off the picks, handling off the picks. And I mentioned this comparison in when he was drafted, and he's not, like, I don't know if it's a great comparison. A lot of people called him a combo guard, but I feel like he has a lot of the characteristics with regard to his skill set. Of what Jimmy Butler does. You know, he's a very active defender. He's on ball. He can create his own shot and get to the rim and finish at the rim. So I think over the next couple of years, obviously, I hope he bulks up and everything, but he has that skill set to have, like, that burst that we saw Fultz have from time to time, and we see it in Orlando from time to time, but also be able to break some guys down with good ball handling, like a Jimmy Butler-esque player. So I was very, very happy with what I saw from him tonight. And I mean, not to sound creepy, he's just straight up adorable. He's adorable.
Okay. So this is kind of a combined question, I guess, and topic. This is the last thing I have, and then if you guys have anything else, by all means, and we'll get this wrapped up. So looking at team futures on DraftKings, obviously because of COVID, I think this is actually really smart. They're not doing over-unders for wins like we would normally see, because who knows how many games will actually get played. So instead, your over-unders are team winning percentage. And the over-under for the Sixers is 58.5, which, if my math is right, if they're playing 74 games,
72.
Allegedly, right? 72, sorry. All right, then let me redo this. My fault. So if my math is correct, then I think that means they go 42-30. So let's say we'll set the over-under at 42.5. Do you think that this team is over-under 42.5? And I'm going to qualify that with, do you think they can do that with their top eight? And, you know, you kind of figure, you know, deeper into the playoffs, that's generally around where you see a lineup shrink to. Tonight, their top eight was Danny Green, Tobias Harris, Joel, Seth Curry, Ben Simmons, Shake, Furkan, and Dwight Howard. Do you think that that top eight, and, you know, take the role players in, but those are your main eight, that they can go over or under 42.5, and that they can, you know, at least make noise in a second round series? Steve, we'll start with you.
So let me preface this by saying I am not a betting man, but if I were, I would go the under, but it's only because it's going to be just under. Like, it'll be 40-41 wins.
Okay.
And the only reason I come to that conclusion is because bottom part of that top eight lineup, you know, could I do have some concerns going into the playoffs, especially the deeper you go. So that's kind of why I'm at just under 42.5.
Well, you're making 2 points there, though. You're talking about the playoffs, but we're talking about regular season wins. So you got to kind of.
True. And part of it, too, is, you know, throughout the regular season, it's going to be weird with COVID. Who knows what's going to happen? And if I'm not mistaken, didn't they only announce like the first half of the season or something like that, or the way they were breaking it up?
I don't even know.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot can change. I'm sure there's bound to be back-to-backs. And
I think they said something. I think on the pregame tonight I heard them say, I think the Sixers would have like 17 games in January and 15 in February. So you're pretty much playing every other night. Like there's not really going to be much time for practices. There's going to be very few, additional days of rest. It's going to be play, rest, play, rest, play, rest, so on and so forth for at least like a good 2 months straight. And that's assuming they can even play all those games, which is far from a given.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the regular season just can, you know, we joked about in the past how a team like the Bucks are a regular season team. And I know we kind of, died on this hill last year, but with a new coach, some new guys, I think it's just going to take almost the entirety of the regular season just to become a really strong cohesive unit with developing the chemistry, and then, you know, maybe making some noise in the playoffs. So.
Brandon?
You know me, Dan. You've called me a lot of things throughout our friendship.
That's true.
One of them has, most of them have to do with the connotation of me being a negative Nancy. So, Steve, I was hoping you'd go the over because I'm also going to go with the under. I don't think it's going to be under by that much. This is a tough one. Yeah, I'm going to go under. I think they end up winning 39 or 40 games just because, you know, this team has seen so much turnover. And I just think that it's going to take a little longer to gel than we believe. We mentioned the back-to-backs. I'm sure Embiid is going to sit some of them. If we had to predict. So between like the injury history of, you know, Philadelphia sports luck and everything, seeing how things have gone here in the city, I think they'll be under just slightly. But the thing is that if I go over, I'm saying that they could, like, if they don't win 38 games, they're going to win like 48 games. So if they don't hit the under by like just a little bit, I feel like they're going to hit the over like big time. So I'm kind of cut in the middle. You know, sports betting is illegal here in Georgia. So, I mean, I don't really
know. You probably
know
shouldn't even talk about it then. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to get you ratted out here.
This is the opinions, not me.
So you guys both make great points. I think the interesting thing, as far as if we're just talking about it kind of in a betting sense, and again, the fact that it's going to winning percentage, is the other side to look at is if you truly, and this is like kind of meta, I guess, but if you truly believe that they may not play that many games for a number of reasons, the less games they play, I think, benefits the Sixers a lot more than other teams because of things like Joel Embiid needing to sit a few or missing some with injury, maybe even Ben Simmons, you know, if he has any nagging issues with that knee, that would need time. So if you told me they're going to play all 72, then I probably am pretty, I'm right on the fence, and I guess if I was putting the money down, I would put it on the under. But if I'm also contemplating the fact that maybe they only play like 60, then I kind of think I would hammer the over if I knew they were playing a few less, just because I think that might help them not need to have guys miss time. The thing that troubles me about this team, even in their best case scenario, which I think is kind of what you're getting at, Brandon, is there's definitely a very real probability that they crush this number if everything goes right. We saw what happened tonight, and we know the fit is good, and we've been discussing all the reasons why it wouldn't. But if the stars align, I mean, this team could go absolutely nuts because a lot of things make sense, as we've talked about. So they could crush that number. It seems unlikely that they fall short of it significantly. If they're going to fall short, it'll be close. But the scary thing for this team for me, and I got thinking about this because our friend John Barchard, you know, I think it's kind of a joke, but it is a real question. You know, how are they going to slash can they screw this up? And my thought was like, yes, they obviously are because they're the Sixers, and they definitely can. And the scariest part for this team is, all things considered, this is, again, like the fourth time in 4 years that this team is ridiculously different going in to a season. And every other season that's been our excuse is, oh, this team hasn't had time to gel. They're going to have to learn how to play with each other. And by all accounts, this is going to be the hardest one to do that. You had no offseason. Some of these guys were signed or drafted in the last like 30 to 45 days, and they've only been in town, a lot of these guys, for, you know, 10 to 14 days to even get started. So all the other seasons, we've complained about them needing to find chemistry and figure things out. This is going to be the worst example of it all, and I think you saw that, especially in a lot of the offensive numbers tonight, where really outside of Joel Embiid, you know, getting to the line and doing his thing, there's a lot of clunkiness. It's very ugly and sloppy, as Brandon mentioned. And, you know, it just wasn't all that fluent. And I think it'll be a lot easier based on the personnel for them to get the defense to at least, you know, above league average. They definitely have the potential to be a top defense, and I think that may come before the offense. But it's going to be ugly, and they may come out of the gate a little slow. And you may see, especially with a guy like Morey, who we obviously trust and has made all the right moves so far, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him move early. And, you know, we talked about weak links, Mike Scott being up there. And I will say, unfortunately, you know, Furkan Korkmaz may be one of those guys. Obviously, Doc seemed to trust him tonight, bring him off the bench first. But if they're looking at guys they can upgrade, I mean, those are two of the biggest ones, where you get a bench small forward that can defend and maybe shoots a little more consistently. You get a backup four that can actually play some defense and still maybe hit a shot. I mean, those are things that they're going to need. And again, maybe they don't want to wait to the deadline to do that, because you need to get this chemistry thing figured out, because it's getting old having to complain about that all season and that being the excuse for these guys, that you just can't get a consistent team in here that gets to grow and figure it out together. And I think that's my biggest fear for them, is that it's yet another season where we're saying, well, yeah, you know, these guys had a week of training camp and they have no off days to practice, so how are they ever gonna figure out a fluid offense? And that's a very real concern for me. So I think we're all probably right that the move would definitely be the under. I mean, I'm not betting it, but I think between the COVID stuff, the chemistry, guys missing games and stuff, I think it is pretty hard to realistically expect this team to win more than 58% of their games. I mean, 58% isn't anything to scoff at, and it should put them in the playoffs. You know, where that is, I don't know, especially with the Giannis news today.
Yeah. sorry, something in my throat. Yeah, I was going to say the only thing that I would say other than Thibault that concerned me tonight, and a lot of people that are listening to this might not like it, but like 75% of Philadelphia is with regard to criticism of Carson Wentz, that's me when it comes to Ben Simmons. And after, look, I didn't buy any of like the workout videos or any of the footage that he showed during the offseason, because that's just stupid. But I guess like I went into the game thinking that I would see something different, and I just didn't. I wasn't expecting him to like start shooting threes or anything like that. Like, I'm not crazy, but there was a couple of times where he received the ball and did that thing where he drives into the lane, jumps, turns around, and then like passes it out. So I feel like when he was on the floor with the other shooters, like his vision just wasn't quite there yet. And I guess like I'm not concerned or anything, but I need to see more from him. I know it's preseason game one, but the Sixers will go as he and Joel goes. And we saw Joel look somewhat like old Joel tonight, but I feel like I haven't seen, you know, the sleek passing court vision Ben Simmons in a while. And I need to see that. And unfortunately didn't tonight. The only good thing from him, he was 4 for 5 from the line.
Yeah, that was
so
really
I think
nice.
A little more aggressive as the game went along. But we need to start seeing him do that earlier in games. Otherwise, you know, I just need to see some steps made in his offensive game because he's an elite defender and we all know that. But if we're going to be hard on a guy like Carson Wentz, who we all believed on in so much, we need to stop handling Ben Simmons with kid gloves, even though he's only 24. Mm.
That's very fair. I mean, I think people are definitely, I mean, he's definitely received plenty of criticism as well, but there is a lot of coddling for him too. So I can see that. I do think for what it's worth, I mean, I thought it was interesting because Ben is still obviously coming off the injury and everything. And Doc Rivers said that him and Joel would both have minutes caps tonight, but there wasn't a set number. Ben played the most minutes of anybody, which is interesting. And he didn't do all that much, but the fact that he just looked, you know, fluid and fast and everything like that is enough for me from this game. I fully expect that coming off the injury and coming off a disappointing year that once everything counts, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt for now that, you know, we'll see a lot of those things come the regular season. And then obviously if we don't early on, then I definitely think there's cause for concern. But as much as I'm willing to overreact tonight, I think Ben Simmons is the one guy that I will give some benefit to and give him a couple of days of the season.
Definitely.
The last two, so Brandon, we talked about this, but we didn't get to talk to you about it. So real quick, maybe you guys discussed this on Garbage and the Gold. So if you have that in an episode, then definitely plug that. But what are your thoughts on, you know, all the James Harden rumors, and, you know, give us your opinion on, you know, what you would do if you do anything, and then, you know, like a percentage you think that he actually could end up here.
I think the percentage of him ending up here is between 20% and 25%.
Okay.
I think anything above that or below that would be a little reckless right now. Like at this moment in time, I think they want to see what Simmons and Embiid have together under Doc Rivers. If it crashes and burns, maybe at the trade deadline, we see a blockbuster trade. As far as fit goes, I feel like people are undervaluing James Harden, which is pretty weird. Like, this guy's one of the most prolific scorers in NBA history. Under a coach like Doc, I'm not 100% sure that I'm very concerned about his off the court antics. I know, like, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are exceptions because they're just weird, but I feel like the James Harden Joel Embiid two-man game, if you're trying to maximize the opportunity to win a championship, it's simple as this: James Harden and Joel Embiid give you a better opportunity to win a championship within the next 3 years than Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid give the Sixers to win a championship in the next 3 years. And that's just my opinion, because you don't know what Joel Embiid's next 3 years are going to look like. You don't know how his legs are going to hold up. We see centers in this league not be able to last that long, and hopefully Joel will be able to play for 5 to 10 more years in this city. But let's be realistic here. We want a title, and it would be a lot sweeter to win it with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. But, I mean, this is James Harden we're talking about. You don't turn down an opportunity to get James Harden. This is not Jimmy Butler. This is not Tobias Harris. This is James freaking Harden. And if you have to give up Ben Simmons to do it, it's going to be an extremely tough pill to swallow. But if it's not working out by, you know, the trade deadline this year, I feel like you have to very much consider the option.
I think you said that very well, considering that we were definitely on the opposite side for the most part. And that's not to downplay how great James Harden is. I think a few quick things to what you said. My biggest thing is I agree that if you get James Harden, I think you have a better chance to win this year. And I think next year it is a better chance, but I would argue how much. I don't think it's like the next 3 years. One, you don't even know if he'd be here after two. And I'm really, you know, worried about how he ages one, looking at him right now, which I'm sure won't be that big a deal, and is probably being, you know, dramatized a little bit, but just the wear and tear on him, the extreme minutes he plays, and how he already seems to fall off into the postseason historically and repeatedly. I don't know that that gets any better as he moves later into his 30s, but I definitely think this year it gives you the best chance. The one thing you said that scares me to death, though, is if they wait till like the deadline. You know, I just spent 5 minutes talking about chemistry and figuring it all out. Now, James Harden will make a lot of that pretty easy, I'm sure, with how much he just does on his own. But if they were going to make the move, I would have rather them just, you know, rip the Band-Aid off and get it done and give them the season together. I'm going to be kind of pissed off if, you know, 20 games into this, Ben Simmons leaves for James Harden. I think that that's a really bad deal. I mean, I think every day you wait is really bad because – again, James Harden's value is immediate. If you're going to do it, get him in here and get the value right away. You're going to lose the deal regardless because you always lose these deals, really. But every day you wait, it gets worse because...
Especially if he ends up opting out of a player option to go to Brooklyn. But the player option that he has is like $41 million. So I don't really foresee him leaving for that.
So I kind of think... To your point, if we want to say the likelihood is 20-25%, I think that's a pretty good number. But not only do I think that the value decreases pretty significantly every day, I think the likelihood decreases significantly every day because I think Daryl Morey is smart enough to see that if you trade for him at the deadline, you're really getting a bad deal because now you're not getting 2 years of him. You're probably getting a year and a half at best. And 2 years seems bad to give up Ben Simmons for, but I understand anybody who wants to do it. 1.5 is criminal. 1 is criminal. Like you're definitely screwing yourself there, and I can't see it.
I don't want to like drag this on by any means. But I mean, it's clear like Joel Embiid is the best player on the team. It's not Ben Simmons,
right?
Like it's just not. Agreed. And I love Ben Simmons. And, you know, this is the overreact reaction pod. So after tonight's preseason game, I would trade him for James Harden. If he comes back on Friday against the Pacers and looks really good, I'm probably not changing for James Harden, like trading him for James Harden. It's like a very back and forth battle with me because I love Ben Simmons and a championship would be so sweet. But again, like there is truth to the cohesion of him and Ben or him and Joel, Simmons and Embiid. They can be friends or whatever, but, you know, if the fit is clunky, the fit is clunky.
Right.
And, you know, if James Harden fixed that, then, you know, that's just kind of how it is. And
it would definitely be incredible to watch.
You have to wonder, I know he doesn't have the same personality as Jimmy Butler, but you have to wonder if James Harden, we've never seen James Harden in a different uniform, so you don't know, like, I guess I'm not sure how we can predict how he's going to act. You know, based on what he's doing now, like if he's happier in another situation, maybe he takes Joel Embiid under his wings like Jimmy Butler, and that could be a plus. So I just don't know. But right now I'd do it. I don't know if that's going to be my answer tomorrow, though.
Sure. That's definitely fair. The last thing real quick, I did kind of mention it, and obviously the biggest news of the day is Giannis signing the biggest contract in NBA history and supermaxing to stay in Milwaukee, which there's been tons of speculation for years now whether he was going to go to a place like Toronto or New York or LA or anything like that. It appears that he is definitely staying in Milwaukee. He will be in the East. He will be basically one of the Sixers' biggest rivals for what appears to be the majority of his career. The funny, I guess maybe not funny, the craziest thing to think about that I was watching Around the Horn today, and they said, even if he plays this entire contract out, he's still only 31 at the end of it.
Wow.
Like, he could still, if he doesn't win in Milwaukee, he's still going to have cashed in the biggest payday in NBA history and probably be able to get the biggest payday again and go somewhere and get a team built around him if he doesn't trust Milwaukee to do it. So, I mean, this guy's going to, he's going to be a problem, and you still have to expect him to get a little bit better to really get there and, you know, put pressure on Milwaukee to put the right pieces around him. But just curious, your guys' thoughts on Milwaukee staying or on Giannis staying in Milwaukee, you know, like what it means for the league, what it means for Milwaukee, and what it means for Giannis. So, I guess, Steve, we'll start with you.
I'm kind of not as surprised as most people. I know there's this all these rumors that he would go out to LA and ultimately succeed LeBron. The one thing that's kind of using my, international relations experience or whatever you want to call it, that people almost forget that, he's not American. He's from Greece. And I just think there's a completely different thought process as far as where they're going. Milwaukee being a, really small city and area, I've read that they have like a, small tight-knit Greek community, and that's why a team like Toronto I thought would be a more realistic destination. And
yeah, I always thought he was going to Toronto.
Me too, and like I've been to Toronto, and we stayed in like the Greek part of town. I'm like, oh wow, like this is really nice, and I could see the appeal here. And I know what I'm saying, like some people may think that it's irrelevant, but to a guy like that, those things are important because no matter where he's going, he's going to be set for life. He's going to be making a lot of money, and he's going to get the most of that staying in Milwaukee. Now, will he win a title? I don't know, but after those 5 years are up, he can go anywhere he wants. So,
Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really surprised. It's 5 years, $226 million. Like, who turns that shit down?
True.
I mean, Devin Booker didn't know how the Suns were going to build around him, and they got CP3, and they have DeAndre Ayton, and they have a nice team there. He signed the Supermax, and is, I don't know how old he's going to be at the end of his, but he might be younger than Giannis. I'll have to check the ages on that, but I'm of the thought process that due to like the injuries to Kevin Durant and like Kyrie being weird and Steph Curry being hurt and Klay Thompson being hurt, and LeBron not being at full strength his first season with the Lakers have kind of put the magnifying glass on Giannis. And I think Giannis is a very, 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 very good basketball player, but I think he's a little bit overrated. I think he's extremely good, but I don't think he's like the next coming of LeBron or Michael Jordan anything like that.
Yeah.
I think if Ben Simmons gained weight and was aggressive 99% of the time, he could be Giannis.
That's fair, I think.
It's crazy. It might be crazy to think, but I mean, that's pretty much what it is. Giannis is bulkier and more aggressive, and Ben wouldn't even need to take those ugly, ugly three-pointers.
Yeah.
But, I think it's good for Milwaukee. I think it's a city. I always like when players stay with the team that drafts them.
That's what I like about this the most. Yeah.
That's honestly, like, it's funny, like, Dwight Howard, I loved him when he was with the Magic, but then when he moved on, I was just like, I wanted him to stay there. And I'm always of the thought process that if you stay with the team that you're with and win a title there, like, it's probably a little bit sweeter of a feeling. But,
for sure.
I mean, I'm excited to see the Embiid-Giannis battles or Embiid-Simmons battles, moving forward. But, yeah, that's crazy. At 31, he could get another gigantic deal. If he doesn't win a title in Milwaukee, he can probably easily just go somewhere else for one of those maybe like 2 or 3 year deals that LeBron originally signed with the Lakers or something, or when he went back to Cleveland for a year or two.
Yeah, just sign those one-and-ones and do whatever you want and still make an insane amount of money.
I'm very interested to see where Milwaukee ends up finishing in the standings. I think a lot of people still have them first, but I have Brooklyn finishing ahead of them. I'm not sure what you guys have them on your list.
Yeah, I mean, the East is insane this year. I actually think Miami could win the East. I think they're going to return the same team back. They got a lot of young guys that should just, keep on going and not really have any issue. They're going to have good chemistry, having extended play in Orlando and everything. The Nets are the sleeper. Obviously, everything depends on how Durant looks. I've always been a huge Kevin Durant fan, and I'm really cheering for him, but I fucking hate Kyrie Irving, and I'm really worried about Durant after the injury too. So I definitely wouldn't have them winning it, because if we're going to talk about, maybe Joel and Ben missing time, even the best case for Durant, I would bet you he misses, 10 to 15 games just to get back into it and really be ready. So I think it's probably between Miami and Milwaukee. I think it'll be really close, but I could actually see Miami doing it just because they don't need one guy to do it.
I think Miami gets worse. But
really? I mean, they could. I could see it, but I could also see them winning the East. I think if there's, if it's not Milwaukee, I think it's Miami. I think they're really the only two. I don't think the Nets will be able to put together. Like, the Nets could make it out of the playoffs and into the finals if they get it all right at the right time. But regular season number one seed, I think it's only really Milwaukee and Miami. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like a lot of people are just assuming that, like, Steve Nash taking over that team is going to be easy. I mean, he has no coaching experience. Yeah. I mean, for I think it was 2, maybe even 3 years before that, he was a soccer analyst on TNT. So, you know, that's not to take away his career as a basketball player. But to just go into a situation like that where there's going to be all these expectations, you have two star players with Kyrie and KD. I mean, it's going to be a really tall task for a rookie coach. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, I mean, they are the scenario to watch, especially with Giannis signing that deal. Like, there's really no more, there's not much more intrigue around Milwaukee now, because that would have been a huge story all season, what he was going to do. He put that to bed, which is another, you know, kudos to him, I think, is, you know, making that decision now is huge, because that really could have derailed this season for them if they spent all year figuring out what he was going to do and letting the results of this season, you know, factor into that decision. I think it's so good for that franchise to get that done and get to go into this season and put that to rest right away. Another huge benefit to that. But Brooklyn is definitely, like, the place to watch this season, whether it be for Steve Nash coaching, to watch Durant if he can come back, to watch if Kyrie Irving is a complete meltdown or gets back to being a top 10 player. And, you know, how much noise they can really make. They're definitely going to be one of the more fun teams to pay attention to, whether it's good or bad.
I always forget how good Kyrie is until I see him play, and I feel like I have not seen him play in 3 years. He is so, like, he is so good.
His handle's insane. He has the best handle I've ever seen so in stupid. The history of the NBA.
Sounds so stupid with his comments and everything.
Right. Yeah, he's an absolute dimwit. But
I guess I'm not worried about Steve Nash, because, like, until I see that Irving and Durant, like, Their talent alone is, like, enough for me to think that they can run away with the East. And wow. Maybe that's a bold prediction. Maybe Durant takes, you know, 15, 20 games off or something like that. But I mean, they are two of that. That's some crazy duo if they are healthy.
Sure. For the season. But again, we know Kyrie's a head case and he'll have his slumps. And I don't trust Durant to play really more than probably 75% to 80% of the game. So I think that's what's going to hold them back. I could definitely see them in the top four, and obviously being maybe the biggest, like, once we get there, they may end up being, like, the odds on favorite to win it. That wouldn't surprise me at all, but it's really hard to see them running through the East. Just, like, you know, they'd have to be fully healthy, get the chemistry right away, and Steve Nash is going to have to come out as an amazing coach right off the bat. I think all those things won't happen right away for sure with them. But you guys have anything else? I mean, I thought we covered a lot here. Really, really good conversation. And again, Brandon, really, really appreciate you jumping on at literally, like, the last second.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me. Very excited for Sixers season. It was nice to watch it again on the TV, and I enjoyed Tom McGinnis. I don't know if you guys got the NBC Sports feed or TNT.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I'm sure a lot of people don't listen to the radio when it comes to Sixers games, but Tom McGinnis is, like, one of Philadelphia's radio gems. He's so good.
Yeah, we definitely have a luxury in the city with our basketball broadcast, and just I know there's been a few times where I have to, you know, leave my house in the middle of a game, and then you turn the radio, and just to go from, like, you know, Zoom off to McGinnis, it's just like an easy transition. It's just, they're both really, really good in their own right.
So two little quick things for me. One, a fun fact, and two, possibly a scorching hot take. One, I've been fortunate enough in my time covering the Bluecoats, Tom McGinnis has been down there routinely doing calls for them as well. I don't know if it's on their Twitch or if it's on some affiliate radio, but he's done calls for them, and I've sat right behind him for several of those games, covering him and getting to hear him in real time. And it's just an absolute treat, and he is truly one of the best. And I don't know if this is a hot take or not, because it seems, I don't know if it's just tied into the negativity surrounding the team or not, or this has always been a thing, but I always thought that you know, Merrill Reese was untouchable. But I think Todd McGinnis is much better than Merrill Reese. And I've been surprised to actually find out that it seems like a lot of people really either have soured on Merrill or didn't actually like him, which I did not think was the case.
Really?
I'm not saying I don't like Merrill by any means. I love Merrill, but I do think Todd McGinnis is a better play-by-play guy.
I mean,
yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think Merrill is just like a classic voice that we've all just come to love. I have not met anybody that doesn't like him. And now that the Eagles started doing like tape of him calling shit in the press box for like big plays like that's one of my favorite parts of watching win recaps. And we haven't had too many of those this year. Yeah.
I love seeing him in the booth.
Tom McGinnis is good. The Flyers radio guy, Tim Saunders. I mean, he's phenomenal.
Tim Saunders is incredible. Yeah.
I think it's a little crazy to say that he's overrated, but I think there is some sort of effect Mike Quick has on him, because sometimes Mike Quick just says things and you're like, wait, what the hell did he just say?
I like Mike Quick.
Like, he's not, like, horrible or really bad, but he's also not, you know, the best color guy either.
I think he does a really good job playing off Merrill Reese, because he's a little bit funny, but he pretty much lets Merrill have free reign, which obviously you're not going to try to take the spotlight. But he seems pretty funny. He does have a lot of good insight usually, and he definitely brings, like, the former player side to it, which I appreciate. So I think that's good.
And I think
this is a whole tangent.
Yeah, and the whole thing that's impressive to me with Todd McGinnis is he, for the longest time, he's always done the games by himself. He hasn't had anyone else. Now I think we're going back like 12 years ago. He did have for one or two seasons Todd McCulloch as a color guy on the radio. So when I saw him on a TV, I'm like, I wonder how he's going to adjust from being the guy to all of a sudden doing it with Al Abdelnaby, and it was just seamless transition. Like, it's like they've been doing it for a long time.
Well, yeah, because Al is fucking great, too.
Yeah, I love them both.
Al is definitely the best color guy in the city.
Yeah, I'm just trying to go through them in my head.
The only thing I have left is...
Go ahead, Steve.
Sorry, you cut out, Brandon. The only thing I have left is, do you think Daryl Morey texted James Harden pitcher from Twitter to whoever's the GM of Houston now and be like, three first round picks, really?
If anything, I think like he probably sent it to Sam Hinkie.
James Harden definitely ate some of his trade value tonight.
Yeah, I think, I don't know what it was like. Maybe he was wearing a couple hoodies under that, because I've been watching the game a little bit. It just ended a little while ago, but he definitely was not that thick. I think it was this thick workout gear.
Yeah, because I saw like highlights or some videos of him showing up to like Houston's practice, and he looked fine. He actually looked fairly thin. So there's definitely something going on in that picture, but nonetheless, it was fun.
Yeah, and as a fat guy, I can speak to red is not a good color.
Oh, no.
So, I mean, if he was wearing all black, it probably would have,
makes me look like the Kool-Aid man.
Yeah.
It's not great.
I do have one last thing, like last thing for real.
Yeah.
I know we were talking about broadcast teams. I just want to say I was not like a huge fan of her when she first came to the Sixers. But I have to say, I did miss Serena Winters tonight. Missed her energy.
I think my biggest thing with her was I really liked Molly Sullivan, and I definitely probably took a little bit of her leaving out on Serena. But eventually, Serena won me over and then some. I think she was actually significantly better than Molly Sullivan once I got past, you know, just getting used to the switch. And I was at a loss for words when they let her go, because I understand, you know, tough times and making cuts, but there had to have been other ways to do that than they get rid of her, because she was always incredible, did a really great job, and, you know, I don't remember where she ended up, but, she's not going to have any problem getting work at any point, and I did really, really enjoy her time here. So, Brandon, again, make sure let everybody know where they can find you and Garbage Into Gold going forward, especially now that we're back in the full swing of Sixers season. I'm sure people are going to be eating up content. So,
yeah, we are on Twitter at Garbage Into Gold. It's spelled exactly as it sounds. You can find me on Twitter at BAPTER23, and the podcast is also on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all of your favorite podcast platforms. We have some merch available at phlsportsnation.com if you want if you want to go over there and listen to our pod and decide that you want a sweatshirt with our logo on it, like, go for it.
Nice. Are you going to get the filthy, nasty whatever shirt made up, like I said?
Because yeah, I need to talk to management about getting that filthy, nasty, sick shirt.
Oh, that's it, yeah.
Maxie's adorable face on it.
I'd wear the hell out of that.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, thanks again for having me on the pod.
No problem, man. We really appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Now that the season is really full bore, we'll definitely be back and way more active and trying to at least do an episode a week, if not definitely trying to get two in there and making sure that we're on top of the games and everything. So been a tough summer and off season, COVID, all that stuff, but really excited to get back to it. We're just in the beginning of our third year now, and really hoping that we can make a big leap. We can't do it without everybody who has been a loyal and dedicated listener, and we appreciate it. And we can't do it without awesome guests like Brandon coming on and really enhancing the podcast experience. So again, make sure you check out Garbage in the Gold. Give them a follow. Give Brandon a follow. All that stuff. Again, thanks, Brandon, for coming on. For
of course.
Steve,
I'm Fire Dan. Brett Brown.
For Steve, I'm Dan. Thanks, everybody, and trust the podcast.